Saskatoon.
Hello, everybody.
Also with us is Thomas Travor.
Or, as John Travolta likes to call me, he's a big new Brzezinski.
Okay. So, as always, we're going to first go breeze through the solicitations. Okay, so there's a new gold digger out.
Yeah, does Antarctic Press do anything other than gold digger anymore?
They have other titles here, but I don't know what they mean or what they do.
I mean, how could you not want to read Steampunk Red Riding Hood?
Oh, that's an awesome title, by the way, but...
Yeah.
So, let me ask you something. I'm looking at Archie here, and I'm seeing Fox. What do you think of Fox?
The Fox
I
was...
Love it.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the current series, but I mean, the Fox used to be back with the Red Circle and the Archie Comics superheroes. Fox was basically their Batman.
Well, actually, now he's being written like their Peter Parker.
But, I mean, look at... I hate variant covers. They've got, what, six of them here?
Yes.
But, I mean, looking at some of the names on there, Alex Toth. I mean, how can you not... it's an Alex Toth throwback variant cover. My God, Alex Toth. I mean, I've been Howard Chaykin.
But honestly, the current Fox is being written. He has like Peter Parker's personality. Like he mouths off and he makes jokes and stuff like that. He's actually hilarious.
Yeah, that's fine with me. it works for the character.
I mean, what do you think, JT, of the current way the Fox is being written?
No, I love this new one. Like, I was just looking at the TFAW listing and like looking at the Toth throwback cover, which I got to see if I can track this down because that's absolutely gorgeous. And I like that they make mention of it's the Freak Magnet saga. And that was like this whole story, like it's just a great pulp style hero story, you know, with the Fox. Like I got to pick up the last issue, obviously, because they're done. I think they're doing another series coming up. And I like the fact that he's just like this ordinary dude. It's not like the where pre-52 where DC tried to, for the second time, reincorporate the Red Circle heroes within the DC universe. And they had like the Fox in there and he was like this souped up ninja sort of thing. No, yeah. I love this version. It's just an ordinary dude just fighting crime.
A Batman, or even better, along the lines of the Spirit.
Well, that's true, but like I said, I just love his mouthiness. Because he's hilarious.
Yep.
What does the Fox say?
Oh.
Ben, you will hurt yourself so I don't have to.
Just let me give you one of my swords so you can fall upon it.
Oh, boy.
This is a good death. A noble one.
Moving on, we got... I don't know anything about Aspen. I mean, isn't it just all pin-up art?
Basically, Fathom, and it's another Image spin-off company.
Isn't this like based off of like work that wasn't finished by what's his name who tragically died?
Turner.
Yeah,
Mike Turner. He created the original stories and all that, and yeah, and they just kept the let's milk this cow.
So they totally Andromeda the hell out of his sketches.
They basically found a bunch of recordings of his on an old answering machine tape.
So they Andromeda the hell out of his old sketches.
Very much so.
For people who don't understand this, basically Gene Roddenberry like had tons and tons of like cliff notes on and like post-it notes on stuff like spaceship called Andromeda. Call Kevin Sorbo maybe ? And then all of a sudden people found these things like, oh my God, we gotta start making these series.
I love that show, but yeah, it just went right off the rails.
It had the best line of any TV series, period. You gotta admit this. I mean, when the modern people find Kevin Sorbo and his ship after being lost for centuries, you know the line I'm talking about.
He's like some Greek god.
Bingo.
Although I love that reference, and then there was an episode in like second or third season where, you know, criminals are hijacking the ship again, and they go to his cabin, and he opens this panel, and he pulls out a broadsword and a fur loincloth, and he's like, some other time.
Almost as good as the one Space Cowboy Castle episode, the Halloween episode, but...
I mean, and another thing, you know, it's like, you know, I almost said they Earth Final Conflicted it, but that became a hot mess on all on its own. You know, it's I love Majel, but you know, she should not have been involved in that.
She's a wonderful woman. She's not the creative writer that Gene was. But next up was Avatar Press.
Again, otherwise known as Darth Ennis's home. Yep. Yeah.
Ooh, BBC Books has a bunch of Doctor Who books out. Collector's editions.
Soft covers.
Yep. But even better is two down below that.
Big Finish.
Big Finish, which is the audio episodes for a lot of BBC properties. Yeah, I mean, when people went nuts as of the Eighth Doctor in that little bit, The Night of the Doctor, he's had a lot of episodes beforehand. Paul McGann has been recording a lot of episodes for Big Finish.
Technically, Paul McGann is the longest standing Doctor.
Yeah, well, that's true, because of the hiatus, because of JNT, but I mean, Big Finish, I mean, it says Avengers of the Lost Episodes, and no, this is not Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man. This is
Emma Peel.
Mr. Steed and Emma Peel, Mrs. Peel.
Emma Peel, who later becomes M in the James Bond universe. No, not really. I'm referencing the final volume of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I would not recommend, because it's almost like Alan Moore saying "fuck modern literature."
Yeah, Alan Moore would say something like that. No.
Well, let me describe it in like 2 minutes or less. Basically, they have this alcoholic, drunk spy they call Jimmy in these issues that. It's supposed to be James Bond. They have Emma Peel, who becomes the modern female M. And turns out that Harry Potter, you know, is the Antichrist, killed everyone in Hogwarts, and does kill Alan Quatermain, and is about to kill Mira. What's her name? Yeah. And that's... Yeah, and that's when Mary Poppins shows up and kills Harry Potter. This is a real comic book, people.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because it sounds like the batshit insane daydream of an acid tripper.
Like you said, Alan Moore. There's a fine line between Jesus and insanity, and he had an eraser. Oh, God. Let's go past that. Let's go on down. Boom Studios is doing a lot of... Not as many properties as IDW has, and certainly nowhere near the quality of IDW.
Yeah. I mean, I picked up like the first two issues of that Sons of Anarchy series that they put out because I love the show, but it's like a loss, you know, it's just like one of those things. It's just not the quality that you would expect.
Oh, and by the way, I sent just a really quick link just to show that what I described really did happen.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But right underneath Boom is, I was speaking to Ben about this off air, is Busta Tunes Productions, which they make, whenever the hell they can put it out, a magazine called Serial Geek Magazine, which is basically every article in here, it's a love letter to, you know, 80s animation. You know, like if Space Stallions is a love letter to cartoons, so is Serial Geek. I mean, in this issue alone, they got an article looking, comparing the comic book to the cartoon of G.I. Joe. They talk about the Super Friends cartoons, Defenders of the Earth,
Fantastic. Yeah, I've been watching those recently, too. Wow.
You know, talking about, you know, Flash Gordon, He-Man, Real Ghostbusters, the 80s Incredible Hulk cartoon, which I love. If only because it gave an additional superpower to Bruce Banner in that his clothes knitted themselves back together after changing into the Jade Giant.
Yeah, I loved it because it gave Lou Ferrigno an additional job.
Did he work on that one?
He was the voice of the Hulk.
That was the 90s series.
I think it was the 80s series as well.
He's always the voice of the Hulk.
Yeah, with the exception of the most recent, with the Avengers. Yeah, he's been the voice of the Hulk pretty much continually. But I think we're not going to ride into the danger zone and skip past that one. I mean, yeah. I know you all want to hear about our opinions on Zombie Tramp.
Nah, we don't.
Dark Horse. Really? Because that sounds like a title I could get behind.
Dark Horse doesn't have that much, in my opinion, right now. They've got, what, maybe 12 titles. The Star Wars stuff, of course.
The Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, it just says Star Wars here.
It's the Lucas draft.
Yeah, this is based off of the original leaked first screenplay that George Lucas wrote before his now ex-wife got her hands on it and said, George, just sit behind the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If you haven't, have you read any of this version of Star Wars, Tom?
No. I mean, to me, the best way to sum up George Lucas was a line that Harrison Ford allegedly said, where he threatened to tie George Lucas down and make him read his own dialogue.
actually, well, the thing is, his very famous ex-wife, who, by the way, was a great cinematographer in her own right, to the point where Martin Scorsese wanted her to edit his films. So it's not like she also just dabbled in film and happened to marry George Lucas. No, she was as strong, if not stronger, in film than George was. Okay. George, no, she once famously said to George, "George, honey, you can't write human people."
And that dialogue was R2-D2.
And the thing is, George took this as a personal challenge and wrote American Graffiti.
Yeah. Well, there is one thing on the Dark Horse that we were actually talking about before the show, and that is we've got the hardcover of 47 Ronin because the artwork was done by Stan Sakai. The writer, creator, and artist, long-time writer, creator, and artist of Usagi Yojimbo.
About the bunny samurai Miyamoto Usagi.
And then we can skip past DC because they haven't done anything good since the Didiot was put in charge.
Scooby-Doo, where are you, number 43?
Smallville, season 11, because we've got no original ideas, we've got to rip off something else and do what Joss Whedon did, and better.
If you ever want to see what's his name in the costume, even like drawn, then this kind of sort of does that for you, maybe. I don't know. Anyways, let's move on to Dynamite.
I've seen a lot of titles in there I love.
Magnus Robot Fighter.
Magnus Robot Fighter, $6 Million Man, with, Alex Ross covers. I hate all of the multiple covers thing, but I mean, like I said
before, I can almost hear the slow motion sound effect looking at the Alex Ross cover.
I gotta pull this up.
I
see the penciled one, and that's beautiful.
Don't you hear it in your head, Tom?
Yep. Oh man.
And we can build the previous $6 million, or they just called it the Bionic Man series, which was based off of the Kevin Smith script. I did like the way they explained the sound away in that title was, you know, because Steve Austin's got like these mini nuclear reactors built into his body, and that's what powers his bionics. And with his enhanced hearing, there's always like this hum or this buzz that he hears.
Which, I like the fact that they explained that he had more than just the arm and legs replaced. That otherwise, every time he lifted a car, his spine would become a pancake.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, they took the good arm. They took the other good eye. You know, yep. But, yeah, it was balanced a decent series.
I saw the first couple of them, and then it just kind of went meh.
Well, after the, you know, quote-unquote Kevin Smith run, they did do a couple issues where they modernized the Bigfoot episode from the original $6 Million Man series. It was
kind of fun. Does he marry Bigfoot?
No, he does not marry Bigfoot. It turns out they are created from a Russian bionics program. Make of that what you will.
Okay.
But well, they also have Turok Dinosaur Hunter.
Yeah. And we get into IDW. Cannon
Wally Wood, trade pack. No, Fantagraphics. Graphics. I mean, Wally Wood.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't say, it also says not verified
by Diamond.
Oh, Graphics, GRAPHX. They've got the biography of Dan DiDio.
The dumbest idea ever.
Hardcover.
Let's. Oh God.
Yeah, every time I go to that, has DC done something stupid lately? I'm sorry. They should just stop the counter at one because every day that they have DiDio still in charge there or Jim Lee still in charge there, they've got something stupid.
Oh, I'm seeing on IDW. I'm just jumping down to X-Files Conspiracy. This is part of the series that the JT and I were talking about, where basically the X-Files, they have the lone gunman going around talking to the Ghostbusters in one issue, and then
Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Oh, You're missing the best one up above at the top. The first thing listed for IDW Publishing.
Airboy
Archives.
Huh. I don't think I've ever actually read or... I've heard of the series, but I don't think
Chuck
I've ever
Dixon.
Read.
Yes, these are the reprints. There was a series of a public domain character called Airboy from the 40s, written by Chuck Dixon and the artwork by Timothy Truman. Oh, God, beautiful art. And this is the reprint of the Eclipse comic series that he did.
Okay.
I know I'm the old timer, and this is from the 80s, but this is one of those series people should be picking, the things people should be picking up. Magnificent series.
Yeah. But have you read have you heard anything about the X-Files conspiracy?
Other than the fact that they hid that Gillian Anderson was gay all this time, I mean, no.
The basic plot is the lone gunmen are really alive, and they get an email from the future, which includes these tabloids, and they go around after, confirming that this is all real. They go around talking to these paranormal investigators in New York City, investigate reports of manphibians north of New York, talk to actual aliens that transform into cars, and then go to speak to an undead avenger of evil, all in the hopes that they can head off a future pandemic. Comics, everybody.
I love it.
Now, of course, IDW also has a lot of other stuff we've skimmed over. I mean, the G.I. Joe series, both the... they're reprinting the original one?
Yes, they are.
With the Herb Trimpey cover. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they continued from, what is it, like issue 153 and onward.
Yeah, they did the same thing with Transformers Regeneration 1.
Yeah.
They've got Judge Dredd. They've got the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic stuff. Powerpuff Girls. The Abrams Trek.
Which they're doing a gender-swapped mirror-mirror story right now.
Yeah. Jane Tiberia Kirk.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts.
It's fun, but at the same time, oh, God.
Yeah. Image Comics. Less
fun fact,
that,
last episode of Star Trek TOS was called by the staff William Shatner's Space Queen.
Oh, Lord.
True story.
Oh, I don't doubt that it's a true story. I'm just saying.
Oh, is it that time? I'm looking down. I'm sorry. I mean, like I said, I skipped over Image Comics because it's Image Comics, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Invincible, I think I've heard that's gone down.
But it
has. Marvel Comics has started their all-new series, the Marvel Now series.
Yeah, not all of them are...
Marvel, the New 52.
Ooh, yeah. Burn. No, I mean, there are some things with this. A lot of people, at least guys I know at the local comic store that I go to, a lot of people are confused by the all-new Marvel Now initiative. It's like, oh, there's another new number one of Guardians of the Galaxy. I was just getting into the old one. It's like, no, it's just... It's a new number one in this publishing cycle, but it's still like, issue 37, whatever it may be. But yeah, well, new Captain Marvel, a gorgeous cover there that Ben just showed.
Yeah, so that's the thing is, this is how Carol Danvers should look.
Yeah.
She should not have that really, really short hair. I love this because she looks confident in herself, she looks powerful, and she looks good.
Yeah.
And people forget that, at least back when she was Ms. Marvel and had her own series. I mean, she was ex-military, she was a pilot, and in the Ms. Marvel series, she ran a publishing company. That's not exactly low-level stuff, folks. She have to be confident.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
The less
like...
we say about how she got screwed up, the better. And I mean that both figuratively and literally.
I'm just saying.
When they made her Tony Stark with a drinking problem?
No, this is before that.
Oh.
She's gone through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
First or second time?
No, I'm saying before she lost her powers.
I know, but first or second time?
Oh.
First time, I think.
This is when she left the Avengers.
Okay.
The less said about that, the better.
Okay, I'm having to rewind quite a bit now because I was thinking, are you talking about like before Binary?
Before that.
Okay.
Originally, quick history lesson. before she became Captain Marvel now, before she became Ms. Marvel, before she became Warbird, before she became Binary, she lost her powers to Rogue. When she returned to Earth after being in a limbo dimension, which she willingly left with a guy who fell, her stalker, basically, yes, who fell in love with her, impregnated her with himself, and had an accelerated birth. You know, it's considered one of the worst Avengers stories ever.
Yes.
Rightfully so.
Yep.
So, okay. So all this stuff, Superior Spider-Man, which is winding down now that they're bringing Peter Parker back. Secret Avengers, Mighty Avengers, X-Avengers, Pet Avengers, Marvel, DC. DC's been around for, 75 years, and this is Marvel's 75th anniversary. I think senility has set in, folks.
Yes.
Paper Cuts is doing... Oh, look, another story about Dan DiDio.
Smurfs?
The lazy Smurf. I'm looking down at Red 5. The Bodhi Troll trade paperback came out, which is... I love that series so much. It's the world's cutest troll tries to be a badass, but he can't because he's too cute.
Go up to the one above that, over in PS Art Books, and they've got a couple of things that... Roy Thomas presents Planet Comics Volume 1 and the Harvey Horrors Collected Works.
The one thing that most people forget is that, you know, there was a good 20-year period where horror comics were, like, a legitimate thing.
The EC era, yeah.
Charlton, EC, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is where Tales from the Crypt came from.
Yeah.
I loved reading those comics growing up.
I love classic Crypt Keeper.
Yep.
I mean, what a great character. Even as a narrative character, he was great back then. I mean...
Yeah. I'm just saying I love the TV version of Crypty.
The voice actor was fantastic.
Yeah, even
that was so good.
Let's see, Valiant is continuing on. You know, Bloodshot and Hardcore. Unity. Viz Media doing anime stuff. Which I actually have to... It doesn't have anything to do with their books, but I received in the email and noticed that they are going to be releasing the Ranma 1/2 series on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Hey!
It's animated, folks. It's 20-30-year-old animation. Does it really need Blu-ray?
You've not seen the Macross remastered Blu-ray, have you, Tom?
No.
It's gorgeous.
Well, I'll wait for it. Let's see. Yale University Press, comics art hardcover. Well, that could be interesting, but it's from Yale, so it's got to be overly pretentious. And Zenoscope Entertainment, where they have...
TNA.
Yeah, they are Image Light.
All right, well, this was the solicitations. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will come back with the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Atkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy.
It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at Decian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we are back to discuss the topic of the show, the Ultraverse. Part one, we already covered the basics of the Ultraverse. We heard JT drool over Mantra for about 20 minutes and other things.
Mike Barr's work, and I'm blanking on some of the artists, but they had some beautiful work in the proper series, not some of these
other later references. On.
Yeah.
No, it's, but then, you know, as Ben so rightly pointed out, you realize you're staring at a dude, and then I felt really confused for about the next day.
I think Tom can has some people that'll help you out with that.
But yeah, no, it's like I said.
That's 910cmx.com, JT.
I know.
We do more than just that. I mean, there are plenty of...
Yeah. I'm just saying, overall, I did like a lot of the comics that came out, even though they weren't the greatest thing.
They were a lot better than what was coming out at the time. I mean, this was when Image was at its high point, and unlike Image, these were some of the great comic writers of the time.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you had stuff like George Perez was doing art on a few, like the original alt run of Ultra Force, and the was it the Breakthrough crossover, and really, Ultraverse in that initial period before Marvel got involved was a lot like Marvel back in the 60s because they had this really tightly controlled continuity.
Well, and you had the characters. I mean, you actually, the characters had personality. You gave a damn about what they were. I mean, they had two superhero groups at the time. I mean, they had, of course, the Strangers, and they had Freaks. The Freaks were, you could say they were Marvel, they were Ultraverse's X-Men. No, they were more than that. And the Strangers, I mean, good Lord, one of the most odd collections of people to get together. So, I mean, there were a lot of things that just... they definitely had shout-outs to some of the predecessors. I mean, Sludge. Yeah, you could say Swamp Thing and Man Thing. But there was so much that was different from it, too. And
Prototype was Iron Man. As Ben and I discussed, the Hard Case was a better version of Wonder Man.
When Wonder Man went Hollywood, that is.
Well, yeah.
Well, and remember, they had Hard Case as a hero first, whose entire team was killed. And then he said, screw it, I'm going to be an actor and a stuntman.
And then when the series started, that was all.
Yeah. And Prime, stuff. I mean, you could say Prime was Captain Marvel, but I mean.
Gooey Captain Marvel.
Well, gooey, with a crunchy filling.
Oh.
And that, and the thing is, they sort of tried to do a commentary because they had like a dark Prime, and then they had where he went all Punisher.
It was
with the spikes and the chains and the scar on the face and the rock star hair.
The funniest thing though, I was looking back at some old Ultraverse comics, was there was actually an issue where Mantra tries to explain her history to Prime to get Prime to like back off being so googly eyed.
And he's a teenager. He's seeing, half-naked, sexy woman.
Well, that's like I said in the last episode with Ben, when they had the breakthrough, like that first major crossover between all the different titles. And they're up on the moon, and Mantra's cast this oxygen spell. And, Kevin, the normal identity of Prime, wakes up, and the first thing he sees is her tits. And then he's like, my eyes are up here, kid.
Yeah.
Like we said, there was good, there was bad.
Yeah, but I think on the whole, I mean, about 70-80% of it was good. Even the bad wasn't that bad. It certainly wasn't. You had even a character like Warstrike, who was Image Comics, torn from Image Comics, turned out to have some good qualities about it. Like, a stupid ass costume, but he actually had an excuse for all the pockets. But, I mean, some of the other things in that they had for the character made sense, made a good character.
Well, yeah.
Is this Warstrike spelled with a Y?
No.
Okay.
This is one that hung around with Mantra.
Okay, because I remember there's a Warstrike that was spelled with a Y.
That's got to be Image Comics, the company where we can't spell.
True. But, yeah, but, like, this episode, what we're going to get into, folks, is the offshoot media properties.
Woohoo!
Which were so wonderfully made.
Well, yeah, the animation company that was so appropriately named.
Yeah. But
Ultra Force. Well,
let's go with the cartoon first. Yeah, Ultra Force, like they didn't even have a full 12 issues under their belt with the Ultra Force comic. And they, I think it was by issue 7 or 8, they were already advertising the TV series.
That meant that they were making it right. They started already production when issue number 1 was out.
Yeah. Well, they started production before the Marvel talks, too. Ultra Force was killed off because of the Marvel talks.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I've read online doing my research on this thing, like, it was to go like drift off the success of the X-Men Marvel series, and that is nowhere more clearly shown than in the quote-unquote theme of the show, where every hero shows up and then you see their name
with the title font,
which is basically the title font from their individual comics.
Yeah,
you know, like there are characters like Ghoul, who is like a member of the original version of Exiles within the Ultra Force universe. He got his own title card. There was, Contrary, who was like
a cursive script.
Yes. But I'm just like, what? I'm trying to think of like, she was like Professor X without being paralyzed and even more of a prick.
Yeah. Really. Well, I mean, her main power. Well, let me go into the comic origin, because they never really approached it in the cartoon. Didn't have time. Her power was basically with a touch. She could manipulate the hormones and the feelings that somebody had.
Oh, that's right. Cause she was the Star Fox of the Ultraverse.
Right. But and she was originally suspected to be someone who had passed around some of the wetware, which was, sort of nanobite type things that a genetic manipulation that turned kids into ultras. That's how the freaks got around. She was dubbed Wetware Mary, where a nurse went around and injected pregnant women with this, and their kids became ultras later on.
Yeah,
she was suspected to be Wetware Mary.
And there's other characters like Topaz.
Yeah, who came in, who is basically the Xena of the Mantraverse.
Xena / Wonder Woman, sorry.
Yeah.
I would argue, because, I mean, okay, the whole idea of this... the design of Topaz with the, revealing here and there costume and the armor, I didn't mind that. Her powers where she gets the steel skin were, okay. I did like the idea that she comes from, like, this mystical dimension where, the sexes are separated. And in the comics, they come together every couple of years to, drink some wine and let nature take its course, and then they split up the male and female children, that comics.
Ponfar.
Yes, exactly. it was Ponfar. I mean, well, if you're going to rip off something, you might as well rip off a good concept.
Yeah.
But in the comic book, it was only like 2 degrees removed from what happens in the cartoon, how she's like this anti-male, come, sisters, to battle. You men, stay here.
They actually did a good job of adapting for a cartoon of the 90s a lot of the stories from the Ultraverse.
Exactly.
I mean, even in the first 3 episodes, which formed basically the first few issues of Ultraverse, they did a pretty good job of adapting that storyline from Gerard Jones, great comic writer.
Oh, yeah.
Even down to the introduction of Pix, who was there just to die.
Which is
sad.
They
killed her off in the cartoon, too, and they killed her off, like in the comic book, in a grisly way of her dying a death of nuclear radiation.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you see her in the cartoon, like, it starts with, like, rings around the eyes and the hair out of place, and then you literally see her, like, her body's basically desiccating.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things, man. It's just that got me as a kid.
There's other elements in Ultra Force as well that are kind of interesting. Like you have Hardcase being like Prime's mentor.
Mm-hmm. And some of the other characters, I mean, they brought in some of the other features in there. It was a very special episode called Lord Pumpkin's Pie, where it's dealing with the wonderful character of Lord Pumpkin, who was introduced in Sludge and then had his own one shot and became a major player in some of the other stuff. who was a drug dealer.
A supernatural drug dealer, but a drug dealer nonetheless. Yeah.
Exactly.
And yeah, it was something that is very theatrical for a villain like that, as well he should be, I think.
Yeah. They introduced the Nightman.
Yes, they did.
The Nightman.
Hey, I liked that character.
Well, no, I did too.
I like the character too, just without the military suit.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed is Ultra Force only had 13 episodes. And what one character did you want to have them to animate, but they didn't, obviously?
Yeah. They weren't going to. Not with her origin, which kind of says it.
There's no way in hell they would ever animate Mantra, Tom.
And yet, they did introduce in the last episode her major opponent, Boneyard.
That's true.
Yeah, the evil anti-mage. I think if anybody they could have brought in, like if they had another second season, I would have loved to have seen an episode where you get the Jimmy Ruiz prototype have to fight and then team up with his predecessor, Bob, who is the original prototype within that series.
I would have loved to have seen would have been Firearm. The original one, not the codename Firearm.
Yeah, like the ex-SAS. Yeah, that was like the... What was he like? I never read Firearm, but he was like a detective or something.
Yeah, It was an SAS spinoff he escaped from. Stole his primary weapon, which was... I don't want to say magic, but it was a super high-tech pistol which could fire different types of ammunition.
So he had the Lawgiver from Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Yes, they had that. I don't know. I would have liked to have seen them bring in, because you basically had the Stranger's origin in the Nightman episode. Because that's the cool thing about it. Like I said before, they had this tightly controlled continuity in the comics.
That was the cartoon's start.
Well, yeah. But I mean, they have the thing where Johnny Domino's Prowler is hit by this cable car just after it's been hit by lightning, and he gets like a chunk of glass in the head, and it destroys like his sleep center in the comics, and so he's up all night. And I guess in the cartoon he got like a after charge or something from this lightning strike that he starts hearing, evil thoughts.
Right, that was from the comic as well. And that the lightning that struck it was from an entity, an alien entity on the moon, trying to contact people here on Earth. And each lightning that it sent down was the jump start, which gave people ultra powers.
Yeah.
And like I said, they actually go back and reference that in the 13th episode, because it is the Strangers, as well as Hardcase, who also got his powers from a different jump start, protecting the entity on the moon.
Okay, yeah, because I never saw the whole series. I saw most of it.
I've been watching them again lately. I found some of my old tapes.
Didn't it? I remember seeing Rhino, or I think something may have released this on DVD. I could be misremembering that. I do know one character they used in the show, although it is just almost comical the way they use them, and I think it was in Primal Scream, was they used Rune, who's like this uber powerful vampire type character from like an alternate dimension who wants to suck Prime's goo. And that is exactly what you think it is, but not quite. He basically, Kevin, who...
He becomes a gooey Captain Marvel. Basically, he creates a body on top of his normal body.
It's all about he's a teenager, and there's all these fluids coming out of his body, so they're trying to make this whole puberty reference. But yeah, but apparently the Prime stuff that forms Kevin's Prime form is it will power Rune and keep this disease that he has at bay. So eventually he kidnaps Prime, and Hardcase has to rescue him, and... Oh, God.
Which it ran similar to it. Rune was actually created by, and see if you people recognize this name, Barry Windsor-Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, the Ultraverse had some great talent behind him.
And Chris Ulm, if I remember correctly, who was good. But yeah, he was basically, he was a god in another dimension and then lost some of his powers when he got cast over here into this dimension and had to sustain himself vampirically.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, it's just, and he had like the crystals around his neck that would like lead him to his next source of sustenance and all that. Yeah. They even used one of the most 90s villains they had in the Ultraverse, who was also in the, I believe, in the comics as well as in the cartoon, was responsible for the squad, which was Hard Case's original super team and his friends that died as NME, who is this giant, like, raptor
alien,
alien
robot. In the movies. Similar to...
It's a giant robotic alien doom machine.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, they introduced him, they didn't do much with NME in the comics, but in the cartoon, they didn't have time to do much. But, again, the first episode of Ultraverse, they show the death of the squad.
Yes.
I mean, what a way to start off a 90s cartoon. Yeah, here's some great characters, and they're all dead.
Well, that's not like what they did with the original RoboCop cartoon, where in the theme, the intro theme song, you see Alex Murphy get gunned down by Bodger.
Red Foreman.
So,
yeah.
But
dumbass.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some of the other adaptations of the Ultraverse. I love Glenn Larson. Let me just start this by saying I love Glenn Larson. I really do. Some of my favorite shows growing up were by Glenn Larson. Nightman isn't one of them.
This had so much potential.
I'm gonna say it right now. I love the season one, like the season one theme song they used for Nightman.
You don't like the saxophone. You don't like the extreme one with the comic book panels?
No. If I wasn't so certain that I wanted to finish this episode, I would pluck my eyes out right now. Because Ben has just sent us a link, folks, to the season two intro of Nightman, which is probably where Disney got its idea for the revamped Mighty Morphin Power Rangers they put out a few
go,
years
go.
Ago.
I love it. With a giant text, go, go.
With the comic effects and the comic panel cutscenes. And God, Ben, why do you do this to me?
I don't do it. Other people do it. See, there's a history behind the Nightman TV show. The first season was actually a stronger season. Second season was created basically when the property was optioned out to a different production company. And a different production company was a Canadian company. So they're like, okay, well, we can't move all the actors to Toronto. So we're going to have to kill off some of these characters and replace other characters with different actors. The only person we can afford is the main guy.
Shades of Airwolf, except they killed everybody off.
This is really what happened, because if you ever wonder why season two has such a weird first episode where they kill off Johnny's father and they replace the black tech guy with a different black tech guy, this is exactly why. Because they're like, because what happened was between season one and season two, the production company changed, and that, you know, in filming moved from California to Toronto. Pronto.
Yeah.
And then in one of the best episodes of the entire series, and if you can't understand, I'm speaking sarcastically, is the cameo by Professor Jonathan Chase, a.k.a.
Manimal. Oh, yes, I remember that one.
He showed up in one episode, and they also had Patrick McNee pretty much only showed up a few times in the first season as Johnny Domino's psychiatrist who would advise him on how to use his powers.
Yes, you are tuned into the frequency of evil. But in a British accent.
Sounds classy.
Because he has a British accent. But Lightman has some issues too. Even the first season, which I said is a stronger season, still has some issues because the first episode of Nightman has jazz saxophonist Johnny Domino get struck by lightning and get the power to tune into the frequency of evil. And what happens is his very first mission, he saves this geeky black tech guy who happens to have a suitcase that has magic tech armor that's bulletproof with flight capabilities, a laser eye, and stealth. And by the way, in the comic books, this does not happen.
No.
In the comic books, Giant Domino runs around, in a homemade costume with a Kevlar vest.
And a special one lens that's larger than the other eye, which basically is a telescoping lens. He needs special lenses so he can see normally during the day.
Yeah, and he also has a stun gun. I forgot the stun gun.
But well, taser, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, as opposed to comic books, there is one thing about the TV live-action TV series of Nightman that I did prefer. The car. I got a purple Plymouth Prowler. How can you get any cooler than that? Now, the series itself, yeah. I mean, it was a Glenn Larson production. It was along the lines of Knight Rider.
Well, yeah, I mean, it came out in '90s, which was like the heyday of the syndicated genre TV show.
Yeah, it was as campy. I mean, it wasn't campy in the same way that the Adam West Batman series was campy. It was attempting to take itself seriously and didn't work. But, I mean, there was it was the same type of storylines that you would have seen in any of those shows, whether it be Manimal or Knight Rider or Baywatch or any of that.
Team Knight Rider.
Yeah, it just...
Oh, God. Ben, never mention that show.
Knight Rider 2008.
I would prefer that series.
No, I'm good. At least Team Knight Rider had some potential, and I liked who the guy behind the scenes was. But back to Ultraverse. I mean, yeah, the Nightman series... It was always going to be a hard sell. And it was people going to say, well, isn't that Batman? The lead actor, Matt McComb, God knows he wasn't a Laurence Olivier. He was there because he was a hard body. He did an okay job. I mean, the only person on there whose acting I actually like was Earl Holliman. That's because I liked him back from the Policewoman days. It just I am that old.
The show had issues. It did,
it suffered from production quality. It suffered from writing quality. It suffered from the time period it was in, both when it was being broadcast and the era that it was in. It looking back on it, it did not age well. Let's put it that way. It didn't age well when it was being broadcast.
Yeah, and now, it's a. It had lots of issues with it that it kept on trying to reconcile because the first season of Nightman, the TV show, did try to bring in an everlasting arc with a villain with staying power who they called Mr. Chrome because he had glowing eyes, and apparently glowing eyes makes you Mr. Chrome.
Okay, works with me. Maybe he got it because he had a lot of trailer hitches around him. I'm not explaining that joke to you listeners. It lasted two seasons, and as Ben said, I mean, major production change between the two seasons, which probably killed it the same way that the production change to Canada killed Airwolf. Granted, Canadian TV productions don't have those problems now, but this was a trying time for them in the 90s. Trying to get whatever they could.
Yeah, the best Canadian production in the 90s was Due South.
Damn rights.
No, best Canadian production in the 90s was mandated by the Canadian government.
What?
Best Canadian production in the 90s was back from earlier than the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Yes. SCTV, baby. Although, well, you know, I'm just looking at the episode list here for, like, the first season. Like, first two-part opening series, third episode is Earthquake and guys trying to rob the evacuated city. Dying drug lord wants to take Nightman's heart because he's the only compatible donor. And then we get to episode 5. Yes, episode 5. Nightman is infected with a mysterious and deadly virus after he has a run-in with a beast from another dimension.
Yeah.
And the best 90s CGI that money could have bought was not purchased for this episode. Oh, God. It's just...
Yeah.
I love...
Let's deal with our bad rejected scripts for other TV series and see what we can pull out for this
film. Oh, let's talk about, you know, I love Glenn Larson, but Glenn Larson likes to throw in not quite as bad as Greg Weissman, but he does like to seed in backdoor pilots.
Yeah.
Night Woman, anyone?
Every time I hear that, I think, hello, I'm Night Woman. You can reach me at one night.
I'm sorry. Those commercials are filthy lies.
But like I said, it's Glenn Larson, not as guilty as Greg Weissman with the backdoor pilots, but he is known to do it.
Yeah.
He is known to do it. Even Tom would agree with me on that.
Oh, shoot. I can name at least four series that he tried to spin off from Gargoyles.
Well, I mean Glenn Larson's backdoor pilot. Hobby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and make a series that works first, and then you can try and spin something off from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Filmation with The Legend of Isis, but that's a different story altogether.
But like I love Glenn Larson, but he does do the back, you know, not a lot, but four times in a 50-year career is notable.
And it suffered from, to me, other than the bad writing and the bad script and the bad timing, it's also was at a time that people looked at comic books as, you know, Image Comics. You know, Dawn, most people didn't think about, other than the death of Superman and Batman gets his back broken, people looked at comic books as Image Comics. They looked at them as investing things, not as literature. They weren't going for writing. And even though the Ultraverse comics were some of the best written things for that time, they just were not, they were not as popular as they could have been. They were starting to make inroads and be popular, but the other medias didn't help. I mean, TV was not going to be kind to it. It wasn't kind to another superhero TV series of that era, The Flash.
I thought you were going to talk about Mantis for a second.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
Mantis had three chances, by the way. Mantis was given more chances to succeed as a show than most other shows are given, I have to say.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, Mantis, M-A-N-T-I-S, with a period in between all of them, was basically a attempt at having a black paraplegic superhero.
And it would have worked if they had gone with the storyline introduced in the original pilot, not the TV series.
Yeah, again, it was a superhero TV
series. It was given two pilots, though. Like I said, this show was given multiple chances to succeed. And the sad thing is, when Stan Lee ripped it off, but replaced the black scientist with a Hispanic skateboarder kid.
Well, we can see. I mean, I love what he did for Marvel, but and for comics in general, but you can see why it needed Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, so many others. If I ever got a chance to meet you, Stan, I would love to meet you. I still admire everything that you've done. I just don't think some of it was that great. Yeah, Stanley in the Super 7.
But like I said, it's, you know, and again, this is the same case with Glenn Larson. I love Glenn Larson. I would love to meet him, but, you know, some of the series he's came out with are absolutely dreadful, but it's, I don't blame him for it. I think that, you know, it's just product of the time and, you know, wrong timing, wrong property, wrong actors.
Well, no, it was, I mean, also think about what the TV people wanted, what the publisher, the producers wanted. It was, give us Drek that people are willing to sit and veg out in front of. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned the Flash TV series, and there were some pretty good episodes in there. I happen to own the series.
The Trickster.
Loved it. Well, Mark Hamill. I mean, that is what gave us the best Joker ever, was Mark Hamill as the Trickster.
I know, I love those episodes, but I think one of my favorites, aside from those, was the Mirror Master episode with David Cassidy.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that one. And not only for his performance, which was actually really good, I love seeing John Wesley Shipp disguise himself as Professor Zoom and, like, try to pass himself off as the man that it created the Flash. It was just, I love that. Yeah, Flash was a great series. And
I love the origin of the costume that they had. I thought it worked. It was logical. It was Star Labs attempt at making a spacesuit for Soviet Russia, which is why it was red.
But wasn't it like a suit for like underwater exploration or something? But
no, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like resistant to high heat and the friction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is why it doesn't like burn into pieces when the Barry's running.
Yeah, like his regular clothes, which they've shown him doing time and time again.
Yes.
Or where he tries to clean up his apartment, the pilot, and almost sets the place on fire.
Yes. So, like I said, it's Ultraverse.
It didn't have the writing.
Well, here's a question for you guys. If you had to pick one Ultraverse character for Marvel to dust off and say, okay, this character, we're gonna take the base concept, bring it back to that, and publish this character again, who would it be? 10 seconds. Who's your pick?
Prototype.
Good Lord. I'd actually have to name a couple of them. But before I can name that, let me go ahead and read a little something, because somebody was actually asked a very similar question back in 2005. And I don't know if you covered this in the... did you happen to cover this in the last episode?
I did not.
Okay. Newsarama, a writer from Newsarama, had asked a particular person back in 2005 if Marvel had any plans to revive the Ultraverse. And his response was, let's just say that I wanted to bring these characters back in a very big way, but the way that the deal was initially structured, it's next to impossible to go back and publish these books. There are rumors out there that it has to do with a certain percentage of sales that has to be doled out to the creative teams. While this is a logistical nightmare, because of the way the initial deal was structured, it's not the reason why we have chosen not to go near these characters.
Ooh, okay.
The Laundry Public. Guess who that was?
Shooter?
No.
Quesada.
Marvel, 2005, Marvel Editor-in-Chief, Joe Quesada.
Quesada, okay.
And you've actually had some of the Ultraverse creators say bullshit. First of all, the only thing we've had in this deal was we get 5% of it. We get his pittance, 5%. That's the only thing that we see from this. There's nothing in the deal.
It's a $20 check a year.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are other reasons why. But, we'll never see it. As for which ones I would love to see brought back, I mean, if I have to name one.
Just one.
Actually, oh, God. I'm looking at my list of names here, and they're just some of these characters I loved. I'd have to say Firearm, because I love the film noir type, and I think Firearm would go great. He would be a great agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Well, either brought into the Marvel Universe proper, either brought in the Marvel Universe proper, or brought in as like its own universe book. It doesn't have to be in the Marvel Universe proper.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Sludge was a great character. I thought Solitaire was an interesting spin on the mass vigilante type. Rune, not so much. Prime, I love the whole Captain Marvel bit. The young boy getting the powerful body of an adult. But unlike Captain America, he never had the wisdom to go with it.
Yeah.
That was just a case in point. I thought Mantra had so much potential, and some of it was followed through until Black September.
I don't think they'll ever do Mantra.
I would love to see. Well, I mean, I don't know. This is the age where Marvel had the marriage of Nightstar. I love the Strangers, although I hated what they did with Adam Bob. I think if they had updated Warstrike, I think he could be a great character to do with. There were so many great writers who did some of this stuff. I mean, it was Steve Englehart who was talking about Quesada blowing it out, blowing smoke up our butts.
Quesadilla?
Yeah.
Quesadillas usually do that.
I thought Hard Case, a great character concept, and I liked how they handled him. I mean, he was the reluctant superhero because he did the heroic bit and paid a mighty price for it. So, I mean, it just so many characters that I thought were interesting. They did some great comics with them until Marvel interfered.
They didn't interfere. They made things better.
Yeah, by killing everything off. I mean, yeah. Depending on who you ask, you hear two reasons why Marvel bought Malibu, i.e. the company that was publishing Ultraverse. Some say it was because Malibu's comics and the Ultraverse were, because remember, Ultraverse was the writer's version of Image. It was some of the best writers in the business saying, you know, these schlubs over at Image who have no talent are making money hand over fist. We've been in the business a long time. Why don't we try it? And created this. Would be starting to gain a lot of foothold. They were becoming popular, more popular. There are also those who say that they bought out Malibu because Malibu was the first one to actually be using digital coloring.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they had a higher quality product coming out in print-wise.
That's true. All right. Well, that's our look at the Ultraverse Part 2. Tune in next week. Where, what are we doing, JT?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky.
Gee, Brad, what are we going to do tonight?
Where are we going to find rubber pants that fit?
Okay, well, quick. Somebody asked me, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
Let's not force it, JT.
No, come on, seriously, I got one. Come on, bring it.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
I think so, Brain, but why would anyone want to Pierce Brosnan?
That's horrible. Let's see here. Next week, we'll tell you guys what. If you all read Superman's Secret Identity, let's come back and talk about our favorite Superman stories ever.
I could be down with that.
Okay.
Because Secret Identity is one of my favorites, but I have at least five favorites. And I'm just going to name a couple of them right now, just so you all are prepared. And some of these are official titles, some of these are unofficial fan titles of these stories. It's obviously, you know, Superman Secret Identity. Hold
on. Tell us after the show stops recording.
All right. Well,
our listeners have to listen in to find out what you're talking about.
Yes. All right. Well, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
And from 910 Comics, it's 910cmx.com. I'm Thomas Revor.
All right, and we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Auf Wiedersehen.
All right.